Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Monday, and that means it's time for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com and more join me every Monday morning to review the weekend's movies, and Eric and I talk about the weekend in box office as well. We do this every Monday morning. And it being Monday, it also means that my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey-jokey time, and it's brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. And we are also going to be talking about inspirational movies, movies that motivate you, movies that inspire you. It's Monday, and we usually talk a lot about movies on Monday, so we figured we'd do that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Facebook. Best way to stay connected, facebook.com/NickDShow. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. All right, a batch of new movies came out this week, and we got some interesting stuff to talk about at the box office as well. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, join me. Let's say hello to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
All righty then. So we got some movies to talk about. You guys did not see My Cousin Rachel.
No.
Oh.
No.
All right. Well, I'll do that one. I'll take care of that one. My Cousin Rachel is a period piece. It's a remake of a movie that was made 52 or 53 with Olivia de Havilland and Richard Burton. And it's a mystery, pulpy mystery, from the author of Don't Look Now and Rebecca. And this is a period piece with Rachel Weisz plays this mysterious, her name is Rachel, plays this mysterious woman who this man, played by Sam Claflin. His cousin was married to her, and there was he mysteriously died, and the Sam Claflin character is convinced that this woman, Rachel, had something to do with it, and then he meets her, and they begin sort of being attracted to one another, and the question is whether or not she really did it, whether she's trying to kill him, even though she says she doesn't want the estate, doesn't do anything to look as though she killed him in order to get the estate. But things start to get progressively more mysterious and treacherous. So this ultimately is, did she or didn't she? And you find out, you go back and forth throughout the entire movie. It is beautifully shot. Roger Michel directed it, who's got a really interesting, he's got a very, very interesting filmography, don't you guys think?
Oh God, yes.
I mean, he's all over the place, and as I was just thinking, since I mentioned him, if people have not seen the movie Changing Lanes, I know it's a long time ago. What was it? Changing Lanes was like 15 years ago,
2002.
Yeah, but it was that is a damn good movie. If people have not seen it, really great, one of the best performances Ben Affleck up until that point gave. And that was at a time. I mean, that was like right after not Titanic, the other Pearl Harbor. That was like right after Pearl Harbor when he was just, not the Ben Affleck that we know now. So, and Samuel Jackson's really good in it. Anyway, to get back to this movie, it is beautifully shot. It's sumptuously photographed. It's got a great score. The costume design is great. The period detail is fantastic. Performances are good, but this movie belongs to Rachel Weisz. She is great in this movie. And I have not seen the original, nor have I read the book. I've not read the book, but I've seen the original, but it's been many, many, many years. To try and fill the shoes of Olivia de Havilland is not an easy thing. And I don't know if a lot of people even remember the original film or who have read the book. But she's great in this movie. I mean, she plays that line between dangerous and beautiful and scary and vulnerable. And she's always been one of my favorite actresses, and this movie is one of the best performances that she's ever given. It's mysterious, and it kept me interested the entire time. I think it's well made, and I think more people should see it because there were about two people in the theater when I went. And if you're a fan of Rachel Weisz, you've got to see it because she really, really is doing great, great, mysterious, layered work in this movie. So My Cousin Rachel. I enjoyed it. I'm recommending it. I thought it was very good. So there you go. Now you guys like Rachel Weisz, obviously.
Always.
Yeah, you got to see it. You got to see it. Okay. Let's start out now. I have not seen Daniel Blake. So Eric, why don't you tell us about it?
Okay. Oh, this is the new film from Ken Loach. Did very well at the Cannes Film Festival last year. I think it won an award with the Cannes Film Festival last year. It won the Palme d'Or, as a matter of fact. It stars, hold on, what is his name? Dave Johns as Daniel Blake. And he's a near 60-year-old worker living in Newcastle, and he has had a heart attack. And he's trying to get basically compensation from the the welfare community and employment insurance and stuff. And he basically finds himself in just, you know, the, sort of this caught up in the system. Read a lot of red tape. Can't get you know, can't seem to get satisfaction with all the paperwork that he's filing, and he's not exactly computer literate. So in the sort of the modern times now, it's just not he's just, you know, he's just out there. He's just sort of floating in the wind until he can get, you know, everything filed. Along his way, he meets a single mother who's also having her own problems in the job system. And they strike up a friendship, and he becomes a friend to both her and her child. And it's just, you know, it seems like a very atypical kind of story that we've seen many times before, and we have for certain. And Ken Loach is a director that, you know, sometimes can be very heavy-handed, sometimes can be very uninvolving, depending on from project to project. A guy that's also had a very very vast resume. But this is one of the films that I responded to the most in his resume. I think that Dave Johns is terrific as Daniel Blake. Really just wonderfully natural. The movie reminded me a lot of kind of the natural feel that it has. A movie from a few years ago called This Is Martin Bonner. It's kind of just has this kind of this really relaxed, easygoing flow to it. And it's something that, you know, no matter what age you are, you can sort of, you know, especially if, you know, if you're not, you know, amongst the 1%, you can actually really feel just at some point all being caught up as just, you know, part of the numbers game. You're just a guy out there trying to do the best you can for yourself or for, you know, people around you, but the bureaucratic system just won't allow it sometimes. And it's really kind of a beautiful movie. It's really funny. There's an opening phone call over the opening credits that feels like it could be right out of an Albert Brooks movie. So it has a really good sense of humor to it, as well as being genuinely moving. I'm surprised that even this movie, how they're sort of releasing this movie. It was supposed to be released last December, I believe. I think they were trying to release it right around awards time and get us to influence it for awards. I'm not quite sure how it jumped from December to June or if it qualifies this year or how it works. But I think it might have actually been on our ballots last year. Colin, do you remember that?
Yeah, I saw the movie when they sent us an online screener.
That's right.
IFC did, and that was how I watched it.
Yeah, so it actually qualified for awards last year, but it's now finally, 6 months later, opening wide, and it's definitely worth a look.
Okay, let's take a break and then find out what Colin thinks of it. Eric, Colin, hang on, guys. And that movie that Eric just described is called I, Daniel Blake. It's playing at the Music Box Theater, and we'll get Colin's thoughts on that right after we take a break for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. And it's Monday. That means it's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Every week we talk about the movies, review the new ones, and talk about box office with a box office report as well. My dad will be calling in and telling a joke because it's a jokey time. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park. Check out galestreet.com. We're also, since we talk a lot about movies and do the movie reviews on Monday, we're going to talk about inspirational movies, movies that motivate and inspire. That's all coming up. Our phone and text is 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show, and Facebook.com/Nick D Show is the best way to stay connected. Before the news, Eric told us about a movie called I, Daniel Blake, which is Ken Loach's latest movie. It's playing exclusively at the Music Box. And Eric, you liked it.
Yes,
and,
very much.
And let's talk with Colin. Colin, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is, if you know, when we do our mid-year top 10 list, which is coming up,
yep.
this will be on my mid-year top 10 list. I'm going to make that decision on this because I did see it for last year's screener in last year's screener pile, but then they kept messing around with the release date, and so I didn't get to put it on my top 10 or top 20 list last year. So, fine. I really like this movie a lot, and I'm not familiar with Dave Johns, the main actor in this film, but he is a stand-up comedian and improviser. And I think you need somebody like that in this role. I think somebody who has great comic timing in a film that's not trying to be a comedy, but has that comedian's, you know, anger to it is important. And I think it's a great touch. I think his performance is really something that, you know, people will, you know, his character is something that we can all relate to this. We can all relate to having that moment of, it's like a scene in Brazil, you know, when he needs one form, but he has to go back to another department to get to the other form. Well, he was just at that department. They send him here. You know, that kind of frustration, that runaround of bureaucracy that we've all been through. This movie knows that world very well. And I think we'll all appreciate, you know, later on in the film when it becomes more of a protest against that sort of thing. So this is a film that will speak to a lot of people, centered with two really moving performances by Dave Johns and Haley Squires, who plays the pregnant woman that he befriends later in the film. I hope we're not rewatching the movie going, oh my God, I hope this isn't me in 20 years or 10 years or 30 years or whatever. But it very well could be. It's a movie that's very steeped in reality and knows its subject very well and knows exactly what it's angry about while also being very funny and very moving. So, yeah, I definitely highly recommend this film.
Okay. That's Daniel Blake playing at the Music Box. And speaking of our mid-year lists, I was thinking we could do it at some point. I know now, Eric or Colin, you might be out of town on the week of the 4th.
Yeah, maybe, but I think I'll be back by Sunday night, Monday morning.
Okay, because what we were thinking about doing, guys, is doing our regular Monday morning thing on the 3rd, because there are a lot of movies that are opening that weekend that we have to review. There's a ton of them. And then I thought maybe you guys maybe could come down on the morning of Thursday the 6th. It's my birthday. And we could do the mid-year top 10 then.
Sounds like a party.
Yeah, so think about it, and we'll iron it all out. But that's sort of what we're tentatively looking at, and so because as you guys know, at the end of the month, a ton of movies are coming out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We can't like do both because otherwise we'd be here till Wednesday. So, all right. Let's see, The Mummy. Colin, explain.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck. Yeah.
Okay, so Tom Cruise stars in this film, which is the first of Universal's Dark Universe series. And he plays a guy who's not quite an archaeologist, but wants to come home from Iraq, of all places, with treasures galore against the wishes of his army general, who'd rather he follow orders. So anyway, Tom Cruise and his partner, played by Jake Johnson, stumble onto a hidden tomb beneath deep sands in Iraq, not unlike the Well of Souls in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Anyway, they find a crypt, and within that crypt is an ancient princess who was mummified long ago. That's part of the prologue of this film. She brings her all manner of evil, which first unleashes itself on Jake Johnson, who becomes a bit of a zombie early in the film, kind of like Griffin Dunn's character in American Werewolf in London, and he keeps coming back and telling Cruise's character what to do. Annabelle Wallace plays a real archaeologist who does not put up with Tom Cruise's behavior, his rogue ways of doing things. And Russell Crowe plays a scientist named Dr. Jekyll, and yes, it's that Dr. Jekyll. Sophia Batella plays the princess who's chained up through most of the film. She's the demon in the crypt or whatever she is. So this review is going to sound kind of like my review last week of Pirates of the Caribbean. It's another big, bloated, special effects-laden adventure film that is overstuffed with special effects and underwritten, underacted, underdirected in every other department. Nobody really brought any fresh ideas into this film. It is coasting on just the idea of being part of a universe. And I don't know who's clamoring for this universe. I don't know anybody who needs another universe to have to follow in the movies nowadays. I think we've got enough with Marvel and DC going, you know, every franchise out there that's not Marvel or DC. We got more on our plate than we know what to do with, and I definitely don't need them, especially if they're going to be this mediocre bad, mostly bad. Tom Cruise is, you know, clearly having fun here, because Tom Cruise always looks like he's having fun. He's never the problem here with these films. Although, I gotta say, it's getting weird now. He is 54 years old. He should not be playing a character who takes orders from an army general and gets chewed out by an army general for going rogue on a mission, you know, to steal things. It's just getting weird to me right now, knowing he's playing a character who's written to be in his mid-30s. But it's Tom Cruise, and God knows he looks like. He can look like that forever. Scientology is doing wonders for him, I guess. I don't know. But I'm just not buying it anymore. And I'm it's frustrating to me, because I think we're missing out on what a great actor he really is. But he's so determined to stay in this Jack Reacher, Mission Impossible franchise blockbuster mode that we're missing out on Tom Cruise, the Magnolia, Eyes Wide Shut actor. That's kind of a sidebar. This movie sucks. and I don't have a high hopes for this franchise if they're going to go with Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe and you know, actors like that to carry. Not that they're bad actors, but it's just, you're not really tapping into the youth market with that if you think your kind of franchise is going to fly with that sort of casting. There's also kind of an inherent sexism that's going on here. It's very old school, the way you know, Tom Cruise interacts with the what's her name? I just said her name.
Annabelle Wallace.
It's very much, she's just there to be saved by him. And she doesn't take much initiative. And in the age of Wonder Woman, this movie's kind of, you know, taking a back seat to the sort of progressivism we're starting to get used to with, you know, your average blockbuster. So that may be a reason why this movie isn't really flying with audiences. That, it's just a boring film. It's just not a very imaginative action film. It's relying heavily on spectacle and not enough heart, not enough wit, not enough style. And as such, it just kind of lands with a thud. And this does not bode well for this franchise or universe, whatever it is. So definitely not recommending this.
Okay. All right. That's The Mummy. And Eric, what did you think?
Well, we're kind of mixing business with lack of pleasure here with this movie, you know, considering that this dark universe that Universal has kind of spit and sputtered around doing. I mean, they did the Wolfman some years ago. They have this Dracula Untold thing, and Van Helsing obviously crashed and burned so many years ago, and now they're finally getting around to, like, well, let's just do this. And I think it's just an utter miscalculation of exactly what they're trying to do here. And, you know, I mean, I mentioned The Mummy, you know, the Brendan Fraser films. They already have a trilogy out there. And, you know, for people who are kind of wondering, you know, why do we need another Mummy movie when those movies exist? Well, don't worry, because they didn't really make a Mummy movie. They just did Life Force. That's all I could think about watching this movie. I wasn't thinking about the Brendan Fraser movie. I was thinking, where's Matilda May?
Except she has clothes on.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. but, you know, that which kind of ties into the sexism aspect of it, because the entire, I mean, if you, you know, Colin could have just simplified the entire plot in that this is a movie about Tom Cruise, you know, the living man-child, who is being chased by an ancient mummy whose sole reason for existence is to have sex with him. You know? and turn him into a living god. That's the entire thing. It's like a Scientology playbook or something going on in this movie. And as Colin mentioned, I mean, the movie itself it's just boring. It's so boring. And one of the big miscalculations, I mean, we mentioned last week, Nick, that how what big fans we are of Tom Cruise,
yeah.
And Colin kind of reiterated that too. But you want to talk about utter miscalculation of performance in this movie. What Wolfman, years ago with Joe Johnston did, at least keep this, the old Universal monster movies in the era that, that people have a fondness for them.
Right.
Modernizing these things is kind of a really stupid idea. And on top of that, to kick this thing off with Tom Cruise, who normally plays very smart people in his movies. Sometimes, he does wrong, dumb things sometimes, but he's generally very smart. And in this movie, for some reason, they got him trying to do Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
And basically is playing the role that Jake Johnson should be playing. And so anytime Jake Johnson would show up, I'm just like, it's really kind of sucked because you should be playing the Tom Cruise role. That's the role that was written for you, clearly.
Yeah.
And then again, on top of it, it's just boring. I mean, the action scenes are not very well done. The plot is stupid. The only one I think is doing anything of any kind of decent substance in this movie is Russell Crowe, who I think is having fun in the movie. And I'd like to see him expanded in this dark universe. But if you're going to go from this to Bride of Frankenstein, which the youth market is clearly clamoring for. I don't know exactly what they're going to do with this, and this is a huge failure.
Yeah,
right off the top.
All right, guys, hang on, and we got to take a break. When we come back, I'll let you know what I thought of The Mummy, and we got more to talk about, another movie to review, and box office as well. We'll do all that after we take this break on 720 WGN. Morning, Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran. Before the break, Eric and Colin both gave their negative reviews of the new version of The Mummy. And welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
I, for one, would really love this dark universe thing to be a success. Because, I mean, as you guys know, I love horror movies. And the classic Universal monster films are ingrained in my youth, so I would love to see them breathe new life into it. I happen to be a big fan of The Wolfman from 2010. I actually think it's a really good movie. It's in this Bride of Frankenstein. Who's in it?
I don't know, but Bill Condon is directing.
Bill Condon's because he directed Gods and Monsters. He's
apparently,
gonna,
yeah.
all right. Okay. I was just looking this thing up. I'm just looking it up now. Evidently, Javier Bardem is playing Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
Okay. So that's a big draw. I don't know. Here's the thing. In theory, I really like the idea of Universal bringing the classic movie monsters back, but not in this way. This movie was terrible, man. It was terrible. And it's really weird, Eric, really weird seeing this movie less than a week after seeing Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just something really, I'm watching it and I'm like, you know what? Last Tuesday, I was watching like the polar opposite of how you should make a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just very, that was in my head the whole time because, just having seen Temple of Doom again on the big screen. So, yeah, and you're right. You're absolutely right about Tom Cruise. This is a case of, I don't know. I mean, like. It just seems to me this is like an act of desperation on his part because he's too smart of a guy and a businessman. And he usually does, he usually has pretty good taste in scripts. I think you guys would agree with me on that. Like even if he's in a dumb movie, he works his ass off to make it okay.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he usually comes off very intelligent and really smart. This just seemed like, okay, I got to do this movie. Because the Jack Reacher stuff is not making any money. And, I mean, when was the last time he had a really big... I mean, the Ghost Protocol, was that his last big hit?
Or yeah.
Ghost Protocol,
yeah.
Right? And I mean, he hasn't. It's not like he hasn't worked since then.
Yeah, I mean, Edge of Tomorrow was considered kind of a failure, but now it's kind of like got this resurgence that people think it's like one of his best movies.
Right, I know. And when you say, where the hell were they when that movie came out?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
That's the question, because that's a really terrific movie. But this is, I think this is a huge mistake on his part, and I don't know. I mean, I hope American Made is better.
Right.
I actually think it. I don't think it can be worse. because this is really, really subpar stuff. And I mean, I would rather watch The Scorpion King than this movie. And in that regard, but nothing really works. You guys mentioned it. It's bloated. It's crazy. It's a really stupid plot. And I'm assuming Christopher McQuarrie was brought in by Cruise to try and fix it.
At the last minute, yeah, he was.
But it didn't work. Jake Johnson, as much as I love him, completely underused in this movie. And, to compare him, or was it Eric or Colin who compared him to American Werewolf? Oh, it was Colin.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I just, that's, no. I just can't. I mean, I can understand why
it's
you.
The truth, though.
I know. Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Idea.
Yeah, no, it is the same idea. But man,
that's,
I mean,
all I meant.
Yeah. Okay.
God, no. Oh, yeah. No, I love American Werewolf.
Yeah, no, I know, I know, I know. And all of the scenes where Griffin Dunne comes back more, you know, deteriorated is brilliant. And there's that and the one damn scene, the first time he comes back in the hospital, and there's that dangling piece of skin. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Every time I watch American Werewolf, I'm like, just snap that off, because it's just like, and you know, Rick Baker did that on purpose.
Yep. Right.
God. Anyway, well, we're talking about a good movie, American Werewolf. So this is dumb. It's bloated. It's not a horror movie. It's attempt at action adventure are really dumb. I think Tom Cruise's character is extremely unlikable. And, you know, as much as I like Sophia Boutella, because I actually think she's great, and I think she does some nice physical stuff in this movie and has a nice presence, I loved her in the Star Trek movie from last summer. Loved her in that. And so I really like her. She's certainly good. I don't know who Annabelle Wallace is. I have no idea who she is.
She was in Annabelle.
Oh. Oh, she was?
Yes.
Okay. I saw the trailer for the new one
mm-hmm.
over the weekend. Boy, does that look terrible. Anyway, and she's also like, well, isn't she like 25 years younger than Tom Cruise?
22.
Yeah. And he's just.
And at one point, Russell Crowe refers to Tom Cruise as a younger man. Russell Crowe is 2 years younger.
I know. Well, a bad movie. Just a really, really, really bad movie. And it reflected in the box office, too, right, Eric?
Yep.
Okay, we'll get to that a little bit later on. Why don't we take a break? We got the news. And then, hey, how about we talk about a really good movie?
Cool.
Let's do that. Yeah. Hang on, Eric. Hang on, Colin. We'll take a break. We got the news. And when we come back, we're going to review It Comes at Night right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. I'm your overnight dude, weekdays 2 to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 a.m. with the opening bell and then the great Steve Cochran for your morning drive starting at 6. Our phone number and text number, 312-981-7200. It's Monday morning. That means we'll get back to the movie reviews, and we've got box office with Eric to talk about. And my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time, and it's brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We thank George and everybody at the Gale Street Inn. Check out galestreet.com. We are also going to talk about inspirational movies. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. But right now, we're reviewing the new movies. And we all hated The Mummy. That was the big one that opened up this week. But we had another one to talk about that opened up wide. And Eric, Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay. Eric, tell us about It Comes at Night.
Okay. Well, this is a new film from a great new talent named Trey Edward Schultz, who gave us a film last year. Called Krisha, that Colin and I both had on our best of lists last year. And this film, it's kind of an apocalyptic tale. Some sort of mysterious disease has seemingly ravaged the population. And we meet a family that has sectioned themselves off in the woods, played by Joel Edgerton and Carmen Ejogo, and they have a 17-year-old son. They can't go out without gas masks. They have protocol and rules in the house. As the movie opens, they have lost her father, the boy's grandfather, to the disease. So one night, they hear some noise in their house, and they find another man, played by Christopher Abbott, who has tried to break in, thought the house was abandoned. And is looking for food and supplies for his own family that is some miles away, played by his wife, played by Riley Keough. And after some bargaining, Edgerton's father believes that, you know, possibly that, even though he's not sure if he can trust them entirely, that it's probably the right thing to do to give them shelter. And they also have a trade worked out where Abbott's family has some food and Edgerton's family has, you know, safe surroundings and water and stuff like that. So kind of a coexistence begins, you know, with this new family and the old family living under this roof. Whether or not they can be trusted remains a bit of a mystery, and don't want to talk about too much more of the plot from there. So, like, you know, like I, Daniel Blake, we mentioned earlier, you know, this a plot that we've kind of seen before. We've seen apocalyptic thrillers. We've seen apocalyptic thrillers set in the woods. We've even seen them picked up and released by A24, a movie called Into the Forest from last year. But this film really kind of stands apart. It's easy to describe it as a horror movie, and it very much is, but it's a horror movie in that kind of that everyday non-supernatural way. You know, this is, you know, even though this is a movie, when you mention the words apocalyptic and disease, you might be thinking zombies and bites and things like that. It's not that kind of movie. This is more in the sort of the vein of like a Steven Soderbergh's Contagion, if you will. But more importantly than that, it's an incredibly unsettling film, and it's one that I was very appreciative of, is that the characters in the movie all act with a certain amount of logical consistency. This is not a movie that has stupid people doing stupid things so the plot can take certain directions. This movie has a very natural flow to it, and we're, you know, figuring things out and guessing as stuff goes along, and leads us up to some very disturbing decisions that have to be made. The way Schultz plays with aspect ratios in this movie is very key. That has a final act that is going to have people debating and discussing, and probably, you know, whether they come up with a right answer or not is not not important. You know, like I said, it's not a film that people should go into thinking that they're in for some sort of thrill a minute kind of film. The tension builds from the very beginning of the film in a scene that was almost too much for me to take in the first couple minutes, for personal reasons. And it builds from there. And although it kind of ends on a very abrupt note, I didn't mind it that much, because I just kept thinking about the things that I've talked about, and want to continue to talk about that with other people who will experience this movie. Schultz has got two movies under his belt now, two features, and he's an extraordinary new talent. This is one of the best films of the year.
Okay. All right, Colin, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And Krisha was on my top 10 list last year, and this one is less flashy in its direction this time around. There's not as much emphasis on the single take shot and the dolly ins and everything like that. This is a little more restrained in calling attention to itself. Not that I minded any of that in Krisha. It's part of why it was on my top 10 list. But this is more of a focus on the mood and the performances. You know, the flashiest stuff is the stuff that Eric mentioned with the changing aspect ratios, which is really beautifully done. I think people who pay attention to that stuff are in for a real treat on this film. And people who don't are in for all, you know, other sorts of, I guess, treats or challenges. This is, like Eric said, this is not going for any sort of mainstream sensibility here for, you know, your average horror film goer. This is going to challenge you a little bit with regards to its ending and what it has to say and what its characters are going through. I think the character of the teenage son, played by Kelvin Harrison, I think is our main through line here, even though there's none of the characters in this film is given any kind of short shift. that's one of the keys to a film like this that is, you know, basically a six-character piece. I think they're all compelling in their own way. It is the kind of film that kind of keeps you guessing and doesn't give you all the answers. And I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I think that's a great kind of horror film. We need that kind of horror film once in a while that's done well like this. By the way, a little bit of trivia. Let's talk about universe building. There's a goat in this film, and it is the same goat used in The Witch.
What?
Yeah, it's the same goat. I've read a couple articles already just to confirm it, and it is the same goat that played Black Phillip in The Witch.
Wow.
So, yeah, I like to think there's a universe building going on there.
There you go.
It's pretty funny. And it's kind of a horror film. It's kind of a coming-of-age film. You know, like I mentioned, the Calvin Harrison character, there's a kind of a coming-of-age thing going on in this film as well, which is a really nice touch. So this is really a great film. I think less we say about the story and everything, the better. But it's definitely worth checking out. And kudos to A24 for giving it a nice, you know, wide-ish release on this one.
Yeah. Okay, guys, hang on. Eric Childress and Colin Suter, hang on, guys. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of It Comes at Night, and then we'll preview what we got next week, and then Eric and I will talk about the box office, as we do every week right here on WGN. So stay tuned for that. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're in the middle of the movie reviews. Colin and Eric join me every week. You can check them out at efilmcritic.com and rogerebert.com and many more places. And we were just reviewing It Comes at Night, which Eric and Colin both really loved. And welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, this is great stuff, man. This is just great. This is a beautifully directed film in every aspect. And it is so unnerving and unsettling and in a really subtle way. You know, saying it's a horror movie might be a little misleading. I mean, it certainly is. There's horrific stuff in it. This is more, this is more about mood and tension and psychological aspects, you know, decisions and act things that you're acted upon. And I really love the vagueness of the plot. Like, you don't ever know what happened, where this sickness came from. The fact that the entire movie, well, for the most part, takes place in and around this house, except for, you know, a scene pretty early in the film where they drive over to pick up the other family. For the most part, it's all in that area, and that really adds a claustrophobic feeling to it. There's no electricity. They're all walking around with lanterns, and everything is lit in that regard, and it adds to the menace. It adds to the mood. And it builds and builds and builds and builds to a third act that is just kind of mind blowing. I was on board with this movie from the first frame through the end of it, and it just kept getting better and more intense. And you know, when the paranoia starts to take over as well, the movie just really takes off. The performances are all great. I mean, everybody in this movie is tremendous. And Colin, I agree with you that Calvin Harrison's, he's sort of the through line. He's the main character that we're going through. And you were talking about it being sort of a coming of age thing. And it does have that. There's also a really wonderful scene that takes place in the middle of the night between him and Riley Keough in the kitchen, that adds a whole nother complexity, to what's going on in the house. And just like makes it even more uncomfortable, but on a different level, you know, like sort of like there's sexual anxiety going on now to add to everything else that's happening in the movie. Edgerton, who is just great in everything. There's a great, I mean, he has a ton of great moments. I mean, during the third act, during the final scene, what is almost the final scene of the movie, it's mind blowing what he does silently. Like, he's got no dialogue in that moment, and it's like, it's breathtaking. It really is. But my favorite moment in the movie is a conversation that he and Christopher Abbott are having, and Christopher Abbott kind of slips up and reveals something that is contrary to what was talked about earlier in the movie, And that moment, with no words, no sound effects, no music, nothing, the tension in that moment, and this is just the kind of filmmaking that's going on here. All it is two guys sharing some whiskey in a lantern lit room, just having a conversation. The intensity and the tension in it is insane. It's just insane. This is filmmaking of great talent. This guy's an amazing filmmaker, and everybody in the movie is terrific. And I just love this movie. Now, it totally freaked me out. It worked on every level. Now, the audience I saw it with hated it. Absolutely hated it. There was a woman in the front row who, as soon as the credits popped up at the end, she said, "I want my 90 minutes back. That was the worst movie I've ever seen." And they were very vocal about it. There were three or four people who were very vocal about how much they hated it. And I can feel, there wasn't a ton of people in the theater, but I could feel that there was a lot of people hated this movie. Obviously I felt the complete opposite of it. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. And I really loved every minute of it. And yeah, the ratio aspect, the reveal in some of the scenes, just the use of camera, very, very subtle. This is great filmmaking. This is absolutely great filmmaking that manipulates the audience in the best possible way while keeping your head focused on what's going on in the movie. This is a great movie. It's a great movie. But, people are hating it, right, Eric?
Well, I mean, it reflects, a lot of people are sort of commenting on that. It's because they got a very low cinema score, which we can talk about during the box office, which is kind of rare. But people have kind of rightfully pointed out that it's the kind of anger that comes about when an advertisement doesn't really reflect what the movie is really going to bring.
Right.
So I think that, people who feel duped tend to be a little more angry than people who just, it does end on an abrupt note. And, even Colin will admit sometimes when you have that kind of ambiguous, thing that doesn't fade out into something, that coherent with people's expectations, people can leave on a sour note. And
well, the final image of the movie is heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's heartbreaking. The final image of the movie is absolutely heartbreaking.
Go see The Mummy.
Matt, people hated it. The audience I saw it with, they hated it. And it felt a little bit, to a lesser extent, the same thing happened with The Witch. A24 releasing these movies. I love the company, man. They've released a lot of really good movies, and they're doing it in a pretty ballsy way, releasing a film like this on 2,000 screens, and I admire that. But, man, I'm telling you, I don't know if this, a movie like this or a movie like The Witch should play next to a Buffalo Wild Wings. It just doesn't.
We can talk about that more in the box office, too. I mean, I always, people disagree with me and they think that, this is the kind of movie that should be platformed and whatnot. But you platform this movie, it doesn't make $6 million total.
Right.
This movie made $6 million in 3 days.
Right.
I don't care if people are angry with it. People can be dumb sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It is. Clearly the majority of the audience, but my parents loved it too, and they're in their 70s.
Well, they're smart people.
And they thought it was terrific. But when it was over, people were so angry, and I'm like, we saw two different movies.
Yeah.
I don't know. And by the way, we didn't mention, none of us saw Megan Levy, which is based on the true story of the girl who worked in the canine unit in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard pretty good things about that. So I didn't see it, though. But that's out there, too, if you're interested in seeing it. And so next week we got some big ones, right?
It's a lot of stuff opening.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
There's All Eyes on Me, which is the Tupac Shakur movie. And
right.
I don't know where they found that guy, but he looks exactly like Tupac Shakur. We have another shark movie, 47 Meters Down.
Yeah.
No Blake Lively in this one, though, so that's a problem.
No, but you got Mandy Moore.
Okay. Band-Aid, which we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
We've got The Hero, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
For some reason, Cars 3.
Yeah.
Rough Night, wacky comedy with Kate McKinnon and Scarlett Johansson. And then the one that I am most looking forward to is Beatrice at Dinner.
Yeah.
Written by the great Mike White, featuring Salma Hayek and John Lithgow. That's the one that I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
So, anyway. And we'll review all of those next week. And Colin, thanks, man.
All righty.
You have a good one, and then we'll figure out the date on coming down here to do the midterms, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, there you go. Colin, there you go. And Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
Eric is going to hang out with us, and we're going to talk box office right after we take this break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah. How are you? It's Monday morning. That means my dad will be calling in to tell a jokey time, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We just finished up all the movie reviews, but now Eric is going to stick around, and we're going to talk box office. Eric Childress writes a piece about box office analysis every week on movies.com. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And tell everybody how they can see you on the TV machine.
Yes. Every week, every Thursday, a show called Business First AM, I do a segment called Movies and Money, where we talk about the new releases and examine their box office potential. And that's every Thursday morning at 5 a.m., so you can set your DVRs for that.
That's there you
right
go.
After your show.
Or listen to the show and then turn on the TV and watch Eric.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, let's talk about the box office. Wonder Woman. Number one again this week, $57.1 million over the weekend, $205 million total in 2 weeks. And it was not a big drop-off either, right?
No, and that's the thing that people should be looking at. Not the fact that it beat The Mummy, not the fact that it crushed The Mummy, which there are a variety of factors for that. But there have been, other than Wonder Woman, there have been 58 films that have actually opened to more than $90 million in their opening weekend. Of those 58, only 14 of them had less than a 50% drop in their second weekend.
Wow.
Okay, and it's very rare territory. I mean, we're talking Pixar, Star Wars, Harry Potter's, and, you know, Spider-Man, Iron Man, those type of movies. So Wonder Woman is in very rare territory right now, and, you know, you only get two, three, maybe four of these movies a year where a movie just sort of grips the nation.
Mm-hmm.
It survives its marketing. Critics like it, audiences like it, and then they start spreading the word. We saw it with Get Out back in February.
Yep.
And now we're seeing it with Wonder Woman.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's really a pretty amazing story. And what's the biggest movie of the summer right now remains Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and I think still will be. When all is said and done, I mean, it'll be if Wonder Woman could somehow pass Guardians, that's going to be quite a story.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I mean, I think it'll probably have a pretty small drop off next week too. But Guardians had that same sort of success out of the box and opened a little bit bigger, so it's really kind of ahead of Wonder Woman's pace right now. But the next few weeks, Wonder Woman's going to kind of own June.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah,
so.
And what is it? It's at $205 million in America. What about worldwide?
Worldwide, $435 million.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, wow.
They're doing very well overall.
There you go. Wonder Woman, huge, huge hit. Yep. All right. Number two is The Mummy, $32.2 million. Budget on this one?
Well, depends on who you ask or what article you read.
Mm-hmm.
The budget that Universal has put out there is $125 million.
Okay.
Which seems right to me. That looks about right. And if it's only $125 million, once this thing crosses like $400 million worldwide, and it's almost halfway to that right now, even with the poor U.S. performance, then it's probably going to be a hit. Now, there have been other articles that have suggested that Universal might be lowballing this thing and that the actual production budget was somewhere around $190 million.
Oof.
And that and added into the P&A cost could be anywhere between like $335 to $370 million.
Good Lord.
Dollars. And if that's true, then you're going from minor hit to one of the biggest bombs in years.
And again, like has been happening so often, people are going to blame critics on this one.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think that we're in this period now where I want to make anything political, but we are in this sort of blame the press kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Rotten Tomatoes has been getting a lot of press, from outside press lately, because of the what happened with Baywatch.
Mm-hmm.
And Pirates. And, Pirates was going to fall anyway, whether critics liked it or not. It didn't matter. People
were
just kind of done with that series.
Yeah.
Baywatch was kind of, is it any good? Let's listen to the critics. And they destroyed it.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
It was really bad. And they sort of did the same thing with The Mummy. A lot of people out there calling it Tom Cruise's worst movie.
Yeah.
I don't entirely disagree.
Yeah.
It's really down there.
No, it's really one of the worst movies he's ever
made. Yeah. And so, you haven't heard it yet, but I think by, in a couple days this week, you might hear people, bring up that point again.
Okay. Number three, Captain Underpants, $12.3 million, $44.5 million. That's about all it's going to do now because Cars 3 is coming out, and it's going to take the audience away, right?
Yeah, it's going to probably drop about 45-50% again next week. Not a particularly strong showing. Even with a small $38 million budget, this movie is going to have to wait for its international bucks to kick in for it to be considered a hit. Mm. So it's probably not even going to make $75 million here in the U.S.
Okay. Number four, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, $10.7 million. Its total, $135.8 million. Again, disappointment.
Yeah, but $600 million worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's probably going to surpass the first movie, which did $654 million. But you go from The Curse of the Black Pearl, and then the second lowest grossing film in the franchise is at World's End, which did $964 million worldwide.
Wow.
So it's going to come in probably somewhere in between that. It's going to need once it gets to $700 million, it'll be in profit.
Okay. Number five, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Obviously, this is a massive hit. $6.2 million, bringing its total in America to $366 million.
Yeah, looks like it's probably going to fall short of $400 that I thought it was going to make here in the U.S., but it's over $800 million worldwide. So no complaints here whatsoever.
Okay. Number six, the best movie to come out this week. It Comes at Night, $6 million. As you said earlier about the platforming, you didn't think it would make $6 million total.
Well, A24, this is, the second film that they have launched wide into, like, over 2,000 screens. They did it with this, and they did it with The Witch.
Mm-hmm.
And The Witch is one of their, highest-grossing films to date. Their highest-grossing film to date is Moonlight. And then, obviously, that built upon awards steam and everything.
Yeah.
So, I encourage this. I think that not everything comes down to... We're talking about box office here, but not everything comes down to, some sort of, just because it doesn't measure up to Wonder Woman or Mummy numbers, doesn't mean it's necessarily some sort of flop. And I know that people are ignorant enough to sort of look at a box office total and think that because it didn't come in number one, or like, ooh, it came in number six, it didn't even make the top five, that means something. This movie cost $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that, yes, you can have small-budget movies that gross a lot of money, like Get Out, like Split, the Blumhouse, initiative,
yep.
Basically.
Yep.
But, a $5 million movie that is getting a lot of critical acclaim is A24 had the moxie to, release this thing wide and move it up from August to June on top of it with no festival buzz that, The Witch had at least that going into it.
Right.
A Joel Edgerton, Christopher Abbott movie in June against The Mummy.
Right.
Bravo to A24, seriously, for doing this.
Yeah.
And if they would have released this in, four screens and then 60 screens next week, you wouldn't see this movie make $6 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if it drops off next week and it ends up making $10 to $12 million, that to me is a success.
Number seven, Baywatch. Wow. $4.6 million. Its total is only $51 million. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Heads are going to be rolling at Paramount over this one. I mean, I think that this was one. They got if Transformers underperforms in any way in a couple of weeks, the heads are going to start getting lopped off over there because they have they're in the middle of a year and a half now of just bomb after bomb after bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And Baywatch should have been something that should have just made them a little bit of nice summer cash.
Yeah.
And it just because it was so bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie, man. Terrible. And I don't really see Transformers doing great business. Does anybody really care anymore about that franchise?
I don't think so. I think it's going to have a sort of a Pirates send off. It's going to probably do under $200 million here in the U.S. No, I don't know anyone who likes the Mark Wahlberg movie. I haven't even seen it, frankly, the fourth one.
Yeah.
But it'll probably do really well overseas. I mean, as long as these movies keep doing huge international numbers, they'll continue making them.
And then Megan Levy with $3.7 million. What kind of release did that get? Was that a small release? Or
Like I think like 1,900 screens. So, again, it was Bleecker Street. This is another independent studio that hasn't released a lot of stuff wide. And I think this is the first or second movie that they even – I think it's the first movie they even released this wide. It was advertised as well as it possibly could be. But it's just, if this movie platformed, you wouldn't be hearing about it in week two or three.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, get it out there, let it make its $3-4 million, and, get it out there in home video really quick.
And another massive bomb coming in at number nine, Alien Covenant, bringing its total only to $71 million. That's a bomb.
That's a bomb. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw The Mummy take that same trajectory.
Yeah.
Too that I mean it opened to less than Alien Covenant, for God's sake,
man.
And Alien Covenant dropped 70% in its second week. Whew. And sealed its fate.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen to The Mummy.
Yep.
I think it is. All right, so next week are we looking at Wonder Woman again, number one, and then what, Cars 3 second?
No, I think Cars 3 is going to come in number one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think Cars 3, even if it comes in like low 50s, maybe. Low to mid 50s. I think Wonder Woman probably drops down to, it could be something as low 40s maybe, or high 30s. But I think it would Cars 3, Wonder Woman, and I think Rough Night will be up there too.
Yeah, it's the first of the two ladies' night hangover movies for this summer.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, I'll tell you what, the thing about Rough Night is I'm looking forward to it because the people behind it are writers of Broad City.
Right.
And I love that. And the cast is great.
Yeah. It's a good cast. Yeah. The trailers haven't done much for me. I've seen very bad things. So
That's pretty much the same movie.
Yes, it is.
All right, Eric. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good.
All right, take care. Eric Childress, everybody. You can check him out. You can read his box office reports at movies.com. And he talks with us every single Monday morning, reviewing movies and doing the box office. All right, speaking of movies, we're going to talk about your favorite inspirational movies and motivational movies that inspire you. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text.